This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Welcome to Jumping Bomb Audio.
Welcome back to Jumping Bomb Audio, a show all about Joshi Pro Wrestling. I'm Aaron Bentley. I'm joined by Taylor Mainberg. How are you, Taylor?
I'm good. It's been another interesting week in wrestling. Before we start, this is not really, hasn't really gotten to the world of Joshi yet, but I just wanted to say before we start getting into all the exciting things that have been happening in the world of Joshi this week, that this, the past few days and weeks with the speaking out movement have been very important. And I just wanted to say before we start, I'm very supportive, and I hope that what's happening can, even though it hasn't directly affected Joshi yet, I hope that what is happening will make all of wrestling better, including so. Just wanted to say that note of support before we start.
I could not agree more. Talked about the whole issue in a lot more depth on the other podcast I do, Everything Elite. Are interested in my further thoughts about that, you can check them out there. But we are largely on this show just going to talk about what's been going on in Joshi. If you want to follow us on Twitter, reach out to us in any way, you can find us at JBomb Audio. I'm at Aaron Like the Car. Taylor is at TA Mambo. I still haven't come up with a song. I really got to work on that.
You have 2 weeks in between shows. I'm surprised that no work has been done to.
What I basically do, Taylor, is I forget about everything for 1 week. And then when Monday rolls around of the week before we're going to record again, I'm like, shit, I got to get stuff ready for the podcast for this weekend. That's usually what happens.
All right.
Great. So I'm before next episode, I've had a lot going on, Taylor. I just want you to know.
Yes, it has been a busy time. But to be fair, you've been mentioning this for probably the past 6 weeks.
Okay, but look, I've been selling my house, trying to buy a new house. That's time intensive. I have a job, Taylor. I don't know about you, but, you know, full-time job.
I also have a job.
Yeah, sure. And I've started studying Japanese, Taylor.
Congratulations. What do you know so far?
Not very much, but it's a lot of work.
It is a lot of work. I've done a little bit of it. I've never gotten too far into it, but it is a lot of work.
So I have an instructor, and she's like, oh, are you okay with having some homework? I'm like, yeah, that sounds fine. And then she gives me so much homework. I mean, I'm having to memorize like 3 pages of vocabulary, and I don't even know this language. It's very hard. So I posted this on Twitter, which you can find at Aaron Like the Car, but I know I'm a certified weeb because the first two things I tried to write in katakana were my name and then Pro Resu.
Those are the two things. Soon you'll be... my big thing was when I took a little bit of Japanese was getting one out of every 100 words watching a wrestling show.
Yeah.
And going, oh, I know that word. I know Minasan means everyone. So every nice. Time they say it, I'm like, they're talking to everyone. They're talking to everyone.
I'm at the point now where I know all the hiragana and I know a decent amount of katakana. And so when I see tweets on Twitter, I just skip over the stuff I don't know. And I'm like, oh, I know those 3 sounds in a row. It's very cool.
You know the sounds, but what do they mean put together?
No idea. Not a clue. It's so funny in the lesson, she'll be like, okay, read this sentence or whatever. And I it's like I'm a 5-year-old, you know, because I know the sounds that it's making. But it's really hard for me to string it into a word. So it's like when you're in school and you get called on to read and you really don't want to, you know? That's what I'm like. But I can't get away from it because I'm the only student. So if you want to support my Japanese learning, subscribe to the show. It won't do anything. It'll just make me feel better. if you are getting these. I mean, actually, I can't even find out if you're subscribed to the show, but just the universe will cosmically send it to me, and it'll help.
We'll feel it in some way in our bones, sort of, yes, that you've subscribed.
Now, you can, if you use the Apple Podcast app, you can give us a rating and review, and I will find out about that if I ever go check, and it will, you know, make me feel good. So do that. You can also donate to the show at redcircle.com/shows/jumping-bomb-audio. Okay, so here's what we're going to talk about on this episode. We're going to dive deep into some new wrestling, some actual wrestling that happened in front of fans, Stardom's June 21st show. We've got a lot of news, mostly about shows that are coming up, and we'll dive into a lot of those briefly, and then we will close the show with a continuation of our project of going through 2011 Stardom. This week we're on the May 8th, 2011 show, so we'll talk about that and tell you about all the shows that are coming up. I guess we have basically three sections, now that I'm going through the notes, that tell you about shows that are going to happen soon. Okay, but that's what we're going to do. But I thought it would be fun, at least for me, to jump right into the June 21st show from Stardom, the Stardom fan club show called Stardom Is Again. This was at Shinkiba First Ring, and they had approximately 100 fans. Basically, at that time when they ran the show, just about a week ago, you were able to do one-third capacity. So that's about 100 fans in Shinkiba, apparently. We've talked about that at length, of what the actual full venue would be of attendance-wise for Shinkiba. But approximately 100 fans. So let's just start overall. Taylor, what were your thoughts on the show?
I thought it was an interesting show. Obviously, they're still sort of outside of the ring or outside of anything that happened wrestling-wise. There's still a lot of emotions around the promotion with everything that's happened over the last few weeks and months. But I really enjoyed the show. You know, we haven't seen Stardom now for, it had been over 3 months, and it was really refreshing to see. I mean, obviously they're one of the talent wise one of the best promotions around, and I think that this show was really a reminder of that, being able to see, you know, these wrestlers return and wrestle again. And I thought that they put on a great show.
Yes, yeah, Stardom is my favorite wrestling promotion, period. And it was comforting in a lot of ways with everything that's gone on. It was comforting in a lot of ways to just get to watch them have a show. And there were some fans there, so you had the fan noise. That was nice. And you got one really good match, I think. And we'll discuss our thoughts on the matches as we go through them. But, you know, that's good for me, and a couple of other fun matches. So I'll take that. But it was just nice to see some of these people. I was just happy to see them. I don't know if there was anything noteworthy that happened in these sections that maybe Taylor will talk about, but I did skip, just so everybody knows, I skipped the unit promos, the 10 bell salute, and the promo at the very end of the show, because I'm just not quite ready to engage in that at this point. It was hard enough emotionally to watch some of the tribute spots throughout the show. So I missed those, but if there was anything notable that Taylor wants to throw in, I'm sure that he will.
Oh, you want me to go ahead and say? I just have one small note about the unit promos. Some of them were very emotional, but they did start with, and Aaron, you might get mad at me because I'm about to sort of dig on your favorite.
Oh, I don't like that.
The unit promos started with a Queen's Quest promo led by Momo Watanabe, who began the promo very confusingly by saying, "Today, it's been about a month."
Yeah.
And I was, and then she said, "Maybe it's been 3 months." And I was very confused about how she would have thought it's only been 1 month since the show.
Well, I mean, time feel a little different right now.
Time is a bit strange. It is a bit strange, but I was very thrown off when she said, "It's been a month." And I said, I was like, "Been longer than a month." But that was really my only sort of, that sort of got a chuckle out of me. Right off the top, it was the first line of any of the promos, because all the promos were done together, because it was a sort of mystery vortex type show where no one knew what the matches would be until they were announced or until the music hit. So they were all done together. But Queen's Quest had the first one, led by Momo Watanabe, getting the time since the last show confused. So that gave me a laugh.
I did miss the pre-match promos. That's a lot of fun. I look forward to those returning in the future. The opening match of the show, Rina versus Hina versus Natsu Sumire. Rina, surprisingly, got the win. I assumed Natsu would get the win, but Rina got the win with the Hydrangea. So a nice little way to start the show with a shout out to Hanakimura. Honestly, I thought this match was a ton of fun. It reminded me how much I love Stardom, bizarrely, with these three, but it really did. But most importantly, it reminded me that Rina and Hina are still pretty bad, and that Taylor would have run them off from this promotion by now, if our last episode is any indication.
No. I'm not running anyone off. I'm not running anyone off, to be clear. I resent having words put in my mouth. I have to say, speaking of the connection between old Stardom and new Stardom, when I opened this first, actually a great thing Stardom has done now is they upload the, or they did at least for this show, uploaded the full show, as one video file, which I thought was great, but at that point I had already watched some of the matches in pieces, so I didn't watch the full video file, but I thought that was very cool of them, and I hope they do that more often. But anyway, I watched this file, and I don't know if it's because I've become so used to the short match lengths of the 2011 Stardom, but I saw the 14.5-minute running time of this video file, and I was really sort of taken aback and surprised. Usually the opening matches for Stardom are pretty short, and this one only went just under 9 minutes, so it was still fairly short. But a little bit shocked. I don't really have much to say about the match. I thought it was fine. Like Aaron, I enjoyed seeing these wrestlers that I've missed. So that was really my main thought about this match.
Yeah, it's like, you know, wrestling's back when Natsu Sumire is thrusting her crotch into some teenagers. I mean, that's what you want out of pro wrestling, I think. At least I do. Taylor's not going to touch that.
Yeah, I'm leaving. I'm letting that one hang.
Next up, Death Yama-san defeated Saki Kashima with a crucifix. This was really bad. The only notable thing that happened was that Sarah, my wife, was watching, or was sitting on the couch with me as I was watching this show, and she mixed up Saki Kashima and Saki Akai at first. I thought it was Saki Akai. So it's like, first of all, fucked up that she has any idea who either of those people are. Second of all, funny that she got them mixed.
I was shocked by the out. I was shocked by the result. And I know that we've talked about this. We talked about this, I think, last time we covered Modern Stardom, which was back in March at some point. But what is going on with Saki? She joined Oedo Tai, and now seemingly is losing to everyone. So I don't really, you know, you turn her to give a fresh coat of paint, but now she seems to be sort of the lost post of the group. So I was a bit sort of thrown off by the result.
Yeah, I don't know what is going to happen for Saki. I mean, she was kind of lost in Stars, I thought. Everyone had kind of surpassed her. And then it felt nice, like, oh, well, she's going to get a new start in Oedo Tai, and maybe something will hit for her. She got that big spot on the No People Gate show, as I recall. She had a title match, I believe. And, I mean, she lost, but, you know, at least it was nice that she was in the match. But, yeah, here she is losing to Death Yama-san. And Oedo Tai is just in a very strange position at this point. Obviously, Kagetsu and Hazuki are gone. Oedo Tai is a little firmer when they have B. Priestley and Jamie Hayter around, which is not possible right now. But yeah, it's just a weird time for the group. Next up, Konami. Speaking of Oedo Tai, Konami defeated Natsuko Tora. Of course, this was by disqualification. Natsuko had the chain that she brings out, and she just kind of hanged her over the top rope. This, I thought, was just like plotting and not very good. I think I'm one of the highest people on Torah generally, but it just kind of feels like, and it's hard to judge people because they have had a 3-month layoff, but it feels like over the last few shows, Natsuko is stagnating a little or maybe getting worse. I'm not sure. I don't know if it's this new gimmick that she's trying to work, but it hasn't been as good as I'd hoped for Natsuko.
Yeah, I think that it's something where the gimmick isn't quite a great fit, maybe yet. I don't know. Maybe it becomes a good fit down the line, but it just seems very strange. I mean, as you just mentioned, Oedo Tai now down to 3 people who all appeared in the first 3 matches. It's a little bit odd now because it feels almost to me like they want to make a different sort of group, but they don't want to get rid of the Oedo Tai name because it has some sort of draw with the fans of the company who are familiar with it from it having existed for the last few years and been very popular and had very popular wrestlers. But it might almost, to me, seem like something where you say, we're getting rid of this name and we're starting our own thing, which is going to be similar but different because now they're sort of weighed down by the expectations of being in this group that's had all of these very well known, very well respected, very well liked wrestlers. So it just all doesn't seem to be quite fitting together with really the whole, as we just talked about with Saki and now with Natsuko. It just doesn't seem to be quite gelling and meshing quite yet. I don't know, down the line, once they start running shows regularly again and they get more of an opportunity to sort of tweak and get more comfortable with this, maybe it turns around, but currently it's not for me.
I also wonder what would have happened if they could have done the draft this year. I think that usually happens in April, if I'm not mistaken. So we kind of lost out on that. I wonder if they'll still try to do it and mix this up a little bit. They obviously were trying to do some movement in the units outside of the draft, like when we saw Bea Priestley come to Tai. But of course, she and Jamie Hayter cannot get into Japan right now. But I do wonder if they will just try to mix things up a little more and get some more star power into this group. I think a real problem is, I don't know if this is true or not, but it seemed like Natsuko may have beaten Ari Sahoshki at No People Gate for the white belt if Arisa hadn't been injured and missed that show. And that might have provided a little bump, although it would have been difficult since, you know, then they took 3 months off of shows. But they do need something to boost the interest, the star power, the excitement around this group. And I'm not sure what it is at this point.
Yeah, and it's a bit strange because before all of this shutdown happened, you know, back around the Cinderella tournament and maybe for the few months before, there was all this talk. I mean, I know we talked about it on this show about how, you know, totally this roster was totally full. It felt like it was overflowing with all of this talent. And now, of course, with the lockdown, you don't have any gaijin wrestling on the shows. And obviously they've had the events of the past few months with Hana and then the retirement Arisa. And then all of a sudden, looking at this show, it was like, oh, the roster does seem... It now all of a sudden has gone from feeling like it's overstuffed to feeling very sort of small. Now, that's not a total negative. They still have a lot of super talented people, as we will talk about in the main event. But it's just they're now all of a sudden in an interesting position, which is totally different than the interesting position that they were in maybe in January and February. So I'm interested to see. I don't know when, you know, someone like Jamie Hayter will be able to get into the country. I don't know if that's going to be in a month or if it will be in 4 months. I have no idea. And that would probably make some of this feel a little bit different, having those few people come over and sort of give a boost to this roster. But it's an interesting thing that came up in my mind watching the show and something to look at in the next few months as the promotion sort of starts running more regularly again.
That's true. Another thing that would have filled out this roster a little more is Jungle Kiona, who was not ready to wrestle yet on this show. So, you know, that's another person who's there, but we didn't get to see on this show. Next up was the Queen's Quest tag match. Everybody in Queen's Quest out Azumi and Momo Watanabe versus Saya Kamitani and Utami Hayashita. Time limit draw, 20-minute time limit draw. What did you think about this match, Taylor?
I really liked it. I thought it was enjoyable. Wish there would have been a definitive winner. I always prefer a winner, but I understand about going to a time limit draw. But we have to talk about, I did tease on our Twitter account, lots of new looks in this match in terms of the outfits that people were wearing. Lots of fringe I noticed on the show. Fringe has become very popular as a outfit style in Stardom.
Yeah, Tall Saya was out here looking like Tatanka with her new gear. It was fringe everywhere.
I think Utami's gear sort of looks like Nyla Rose's gear in AEW with the fringe in the front. It's black. It has the black fringe of the front. That was the first thing that came to my mind when she came out. I was like, whoa, she looks like Nyla Rose.
That's it. I didn't think about that, but you're absolutely right about the front of the gear. I was trying to place like the shorts or whatever that she had on as bottoms. They were also like way different from what she normally wears. I was trying to place who kind of wears bottoms like that, and I really couldn't come. Yeah, totally new look. Utami also dyed her hair blonde, and she and Saya both pulled their hair back, which was different for both of them. And so everybody just looked a lot different, at least the two of them. Momo looked pretty similar, but she had some new gear. And Azumi, basically, I guess her hair was a little different, and she had added some purple to it, but a pretty similar look for Azumi.
I will say Utami seems to go through the most changes to her look. I feel like since she debuted, she's had, in my mind, thinking back, she's had probably 4 or 5 distinct sort of looks that I can think of. I don't know if that's because, I don't know, maybe it's her preference and she just likes trying new things, or whether it's someone backstage saying, hey, let's try, you know, something else in terms of a look to see what happens. I don't know, but she seems to be someone who changes, at least in some ways, maybe not the entire look, but seems to change quite a bit.
Yeah, she started with that, like, shooter-type look, and then there after a while, she decided, I guess, to look a little more like the rest of Queen's Quest. And that look yesterday, but that's when I watched it, just kind of blew me away. A very different look for her. It didn't feel like any Utami look that I'd seen before. But as for the match, I mean, it's going to be shocking to no one that I loved it. I had it at 4 stars, Taylor. What about you?
Okay, I had it probably around 3.5, maybe like a strong 3.5, closer to 3.75.
Okay.
So I wasn't far off of you.
Yeah, I just thought Momo and Saya had a really fun little back and forth. And Azumi, it was just kind of her normal House of Fire. And then you had this Momo Utami section that was basically like an excellent singles match in the middle of, toward the end of this tag, I guess. And it felt like the last half of the match was just the two of them going at it. And I don't know if this is headcanon or not, but it feels like with some of the stuff that happened on the last show and then with the post-match here, which we'll talk about in a second, it felt to me like a fight for who was going to lead this unit. And that's why both finishers were broken up. So they both hit their finish, but their tag partner broke up the tag. And then when it went to a draw, I thought that was kind of cool because it lets that story keep going of who's going to lead Queen's Quest for now.
Yeah, and I think it's an interesting matchup in that I think all four, now obviously Saya is the newest of the four of these wrestlers by quite a large margin, but these are four very interesting, they're very interesting wrestlers to me in terms of where they will fit moving into the future of this company. I mean, they're all four very talented, but someone like Azumi, who has sort of been, to me, in Queen's Quest, but sort of on that second level, clearly behind someone like Momo, but she's super talented, and I wonder if there's a world in which, you know, we talked about, well, will these units, now that they're sort of in these strange alignments, will they be mixed up through something that isn't necessarily a draft or something like that? But maybe this is the beginning of some sort of Queen's Quest, I guess I'll say breakup or division or something like that, to give the ability to have more of these, you know, to have Azumi sort of take a bigger role, to have Utami take a bigger role in the company. Obviously, Momo has been champion, sort of is already pretty close to the top. But these are four very talented wrestlers that I could see being leaders in their own right. And it's interesting now that they're all in the same group where all of them being leaders isn't going to be possible.
That's absolutely true. And you look at the fact of the many retirements that they've had recently, and of course, the untimely death of Hanakamura, and you still see that the future of this promotion is very good, very strong. I mean, they're stacked in a lot of ways with wrestlers. Of course, in Joshi, people retire very early, so it's possible, you know, you lose some of these people. But nothing about the loss of some of the people at the top of this promotion, you know, makes me start to think like, what are they going to do? Where is Stardom going to turn? Because you got people like, I mean, Momo is what, 20 years old? And Azumi is 17, I think. So they got plenty of people that they can turn to. And yeah, I could definitely see a real fascinating story kind of playing out between Utami and Momo, who were already kind of rivals when Momo was white belt champion. I mean, they had a little bit of a rivalry. And I can see that playing out into, like you said, some sort of dissension in the team. After the match, Utami said that she and Saya wanted to challenge for the Goddesses of Stardom tag titles. And Momo pointed out that the last time she and Azumi challenged, they lost. Or I'm sorry, Momo and Utami challenged, right? And they lost. Kamatani came out immediately. Momo said she wasn't as good of a leader as she needed to be. And so she gave her blessing for Saya and Utami to bring the tag belts back to Queen's Quest. So yeah, they feel like they're furthering that little story somehow. I can imagine Utami and Saya winning the belts and that creating a little bit of issue between Utami and Momo, perhaps. But we'll see. Next was the main event of the show, and it was an 8-person tag team match with Donna Del Mondo taking on Stars. The Stars team was Mayu Iwatani, Saya Iida, Starlight Kid, and Tom Nakano. The Donna Del Mondo team, Julia, Micah, Shuri, and the debuting Himeka Arita, who was just called Himeka here.
Yeah, exciting stuff. It was sort of a surprise debut. They had her in the beginning of the show during the group promos, as X, which was a bit strange because, unless I missed something on Twitter, they hadn't been hyping up any sort of X wrestler or any surprise, and no one knew the card going into the show, so it was a bit strange. But yes, very interesting to see her here. There was some thought that she might end up in Ice Ribbon because they have a show coming up in a few weeks called Jumbo Ribbon, and Jumbo is one of Himeka's nicknames, but it doesn't appear. I don't know, maybe she has some sort of deal like Shuri where she can work other promotions. I don't think so, but we'll see as the weeks and months progress whether that is the case or whether she is exclusively a Stardom wrestler.
Really love when Stardom does a debut of someone that the crowd really doesn't know that well, but they play it like it's a big deal. It's very funny to me. It feels like with Donna Del Mondo, almost every time they've done one of these, that's what's happened. So I've enjoyed that. I mean, Shuri continues to work elsewhere, right? Or she was before.
She still does, yes, because she still works in Ice Ribbon. She actually, we'll talk about it in probably a few minutes, she worked a Real Japan show recently, so she is working elsewhere. So yes, she is sort of still a freelance. She's sort of in the position that Hiroyo Matsumoto was in a few years ago, where she was sort of majorly in Stardom. She was a champion in Stardom, but she also worked, for example, she worked in Oz Academy at the time, and I think she also worked Ice Ribbon, maybe. So to me, it's sort of a throwback to that sort of deal, where you're a major factor in Stardom, but also you work elsewhere, which I thought, at this point, with Bushiroad coming in, would go away. That was my assumption, but clearly, at least at this point, I don't know if they will reach a point where they offer her an exclusive contract or not, but right now she is able to at least work some other places because she has in the past few weeks.
Yeah, and as for Maika, she continues to work in Just Tap Out, of course, which is where she came from, but they may have some sort of deal related to that since she's been in Stardom. But it seems like this unit is like legit freelancers other than Julia, of course.
Yeah, so it'll be, like I said, it'll be interesting to see if Himeka ends up working other places or if she becomes Stardom exclusive. Because one thing I was thinking, I saw the announcement about that she had come in, obviously. I was following along with the Twitter and they announced that it was her. And, you know, we sort of had this conversation before the shutdown. And I think that this was in the works before that because Himeka left Actress Girls in early March. She announced that she was leaving at the end of the month in March. In early March, she announced she was leaving at the end of the month is what I meant to say. So this seems like it's been in the works at least somewhat, even before all this shutdown happened, so it's less of a response to the fact that they've lost a few people on this roster. And I think my first inclination was sort of being like, oh, another person. Oh, gosh, Stardom is swallowing up another person, you know, from another promotion. I think on this podcast, I had expressed a little bit of reservation about that happening. But really thinking about it now, I mean, looking through, Siri came in and, as we just talked about, is still working other places. Micah is still working in Just Tap Out. I don't know what's going to happen with Himeka. Julia's really been the only person who has come into Stardom and been exclusively a Stardom wrestler. I was even thinking about one sort of big absence from the show was Riho. I figured that Riho would be on the show. She's in Japan at this point, and she is wrestling other places. She's scheduled for the Makoto Produce show for Nico Pro. That's happening on July 4th. They just announced her for a DDT show in July, where she'll be teaming up with Hiroshima and Antonio Honda. So it was a bit odd for me. That was another one when she came in, it was like, oh, Stardom's getting all these people. But really, the people they've gotten have continued to either work elsewhere or not really that often appear in the promotion, except, as I said, for Julia. So it's an interesting situation.
In the hobby, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up thinking, maybe I can pull a Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card. But with zero transparency on available cards and hit rates, it's all just a shot in the dark. Until now. Introducing Slab Packs from ArenaClub.com, the only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each one. Now, when I buy Slab Packs at Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. I was able to open an Arena Club Slab Pack, and I'll be honest, it was a lot better than what you normally do. Say you go to a card show, and there's a random innocuous brown bag of cards, and yeah, you can open it and look, it's going to be junk. You know what I mean? Like, you know what you're probably going to get in those. Maybe you find that fun, and sometimes I do. Sometimes I like just opening up cards and saying, ah, hey, look at some random cards or whatever. But if you're really in this game to find value and find particular cards, it sucks to have to buy these mystery packs, and it ends up being, you know, almost nothing, you know, nothing of value. Not with Arena Club. You get a display, again, of all available cards, hit rates, grading. So you know that when you're opening up the slab pack, you are going to get something valuable. You are getting something good. And Arena Club, in addition to having those great slab packs we just talked about, is also a marketplace for card collecting, buying, trading, selling, displaying, all that sort of stuff. But those Arena Club slab packs, man, they are revolutionizing the repack game with transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed in your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling, and you can have them officially graded by Arena Club as well. So again, setting these things off, it's going to be officially graded by Arena Club. And the Arena Club grading process is accurate, fast, and transparent, with full grade rationale provided and explanation of how your card was scored. So whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform that you have to check out. So right now, I've got a special offer here for Voices of Wrestling Network listeners. You can get 10% off of your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Now, that's a crazy offer. That's 10% off a $400 slab pack. $40 off right there. 10% off your first purchase. No matter what that purchase is, 10% off. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase on Arena Club. And we thank them for sponsoring the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. What's going on, guys? This is Rich from the Flagship Podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcast Network. If I could have a moment of your time, I'd like to tell you about one of our sponsors, Eufy Video Lock. Eufy Video Lock is a smart lock, a 2K camera, and a doorbell, all 3-in-1, offering you triple security. So you can have everything in one device rather than installing many pieces on your front door. But it's not just for security. The Eufy Video Lock is also for convenience. No more concerns about losing keys, and you can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated cameras. Some other great features we love about the Eufy Video Lock is it is easy to install and set up with just a Phillips screwdriver, no drilling required. Keyless entry, no more fumbling for keys when your hands are full. You never have to worry about kids losing keys or passing among renters. You also have 0.3 second fingerprint recognition and 1 second unlocking. Again, 0.3 seconds, it's going to recognize your fingerprints, and in 1 second, it's going to unlock. And with the AI self-learning chip embedded, the more you use it, the more accurate it will be. Also, no battery anxiety. You have a rechargeable battery in there that could last around 4 months, and you will get a low battery notification before it runs out. Passcode unlocking, a remote control with a 2K clear sight, see who's at your door, and control from anywhere through the Eufy app. With enhanced night vision, you can have optimized view even in the evening. You can also secure your package delivery by view and two-way audio. And then best of all, no monthly fee. A bunch of other brands out there are going to charge you a monthly fee. You have your recordings locally, and you never have to pay for storage. Customer service, Eufy's got you handled as well. They are on standby for you 24/7, so you can enjoy a worry-free experience with an 18-month warranty, all backed by their professional customer service team. Contact them anytime by telephone, email, or live chat. Personally, as a homeowner, I love my Eufy Video Lock. I have the ability to see what's going on when I'm not home, when packages has arrived. And really the thing I love the most about it, the ease of being able to lock and unlock my doors without having to fumble with my keys and reach in my pocket or wait, no, crap, they're in my backpack, all that sort of stuff. All this is happening while my dogs are barking at me. You know what? Not anymore with the Eufy Video Lock. I touch it. 0.3 second fingerprint recognition, 1 second. Door is unlocked. Much, much easier. So if you want to jump on board with Eufy Video Lock, search Eufy Video Lock. That is E-U-F-Y Video Lock. Again, that's Eufy Video Lock, E-U-F-Y Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
But I think currently, you know, my sort of reservations I had when this all initially started a number of months ago have been sort of assuaged by the fact that many of these people are still sort of working in the larger world of.
Haymaker also got the win in this match. He submitted Saito with a torture rack type move. What did you think of the match overall?
So I thought this match was awesome. I loved it. I've been on this podcast as someone who's sort of on the fence about Donna Del Mundo. Back when they were a three-person unit, I thought it was sort of a very small unit, maybe too small. But adding Himeka was really great. I thought all four of them had moments in the match that they really stood out. Even Micah, who is clearly the least experienced of the four of them, had a great moment later in the match where it was sort of chaos. It broke down and she was judo throwing people in the middle of the ring, which I thought was great. There was a Julia and Tom sort of back and forth that continued after the match. They had a little bit of a pull-apart brawl at the end, which I thought was really great. And I thought everyone looked really good, and I thought it was an awesome match. I went 4.25 stars, so I really super enjoyed it and thought it was great. And this was the first time for me that Donna Del Mundo really clicked for me.
Yeah, it was something about adding Jumbo here that I was like, oh, this unit is really cool. Like, there's just something about it that it feels like it has an aesthetic and a feeling, a sense that, like, clicks with me also and makes me enjoy it. Although, I, as I recall after the last show, I was kind of starting to come around on Julia. Also, Julia looks like a different person since the last time we saw her. Did you?
Yeah, I mean, there's been obviously a lot of changes that have gone on, as we talked about in the last match. But I mean, she looked very similar for me.
She's I don't know what she's been doing, but she clearly has leaned out a lot, And just like her arms look smaller and her, I guess her hair has probably grown longer. And I don't know. I was like, wow, Julia just looks strikingly different from the last time we saw her, I thought.
Yeah, and I don't know, and this really applies for all wrestling as it sort of comes back from this period of some promotions having no shows or maybe only one show, that many people look different. I don't know if Stardom was, I don't know if they were holding practices, if they were doing anything. I don't know exactly what they were doing. So I think some of that is sort of the natural, you know, if they weren't practicing, some of it may just be the natural. You're sitting at home, you're not doing as much as you usually do. You're not wrestling every week like you're used to. Yeah, I could see that. And, you know, I've seen some changes through some other various wrestlers from sort of before and after period.
As I said earlier, I skipped the post-match promo based on a warning from you, Taylor. So was there anything in here that was newsworthy that we need to know as far as storylines or anything going forward?
No, nothing newsworthy. Donna Del Mundo won the match, so they got the post-match promo. It was mostly about, you know, welcome back. We're glad to be here. Here's Himika. She's our new, you know, she's a new person in Donna Del Mundo. So that was really the main thrust. There was the, as I mentioned, I think right after the match ended, there was a small pull apart between Tom Nakano and Julia. So it seems like they may be setting that up, maybe for a singles match down the line or something like that. But that was really the big, that was the biggest possible storyline implication in the after match promo.
Okay, well, that is everything that happened on the June 21st Stardom show. I don't know. I had their Twitter muted. I was trying to avoid a little bit, so I don't know. Have they set up their next show?
I checked. I didn't see anything on the Twitter. Because I looked as well, because right before the show, I was wondering, I was saying, oh, when are they going to have the next show? I don't know. It may be that they haven't decided, or maybe they could do what they did here, which is they'll announce the show the week before and it'll sort of be another mystery show. I don't know. But as of now, they have not said, at least that I've seen.
Well, this, I mean, for me, it was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it, but I do hope to see them get back into, you know, storylines and narratives that will be fun to follow. But overall, really enjoyed this show.
Yeah, super fun show. I recommend checking it out. As I said, they put the complete show file up so you can watch it all. You don't have to click out. And I think the whole show in total, with all the pre-match promo and the post-match promo and everything, is only an hour and 45 minutes. So it's a fairly quick show. Easy to get through, easy watch. So definitely recommend it, especially the main event, which I thought was really, really great.
I was thinking of how reminiscent it was of 2011 Stardom as I was realizing how short the show was. All right, well, let's get into the news from the week. The first thing we have here is that Actress Girls is opening a sub-brand called Action Ring Girls.
Yeah, they tweeted, they started a Twitter account, Action Ring Girls. There isn't a lot of details yet as to what that is. They had some video of some people training. Tei Hanma was there. And Act Yasukawa, who many people may know from Stardom, did tweet about it. Don't know if that means that she's heavily involved or if she's involved at all. We don't know. I actually tweeted about it from the Jumping Bomb Audio Twitter account and received a reply back from them, actually, which was fairly exciting. And they said, just very briefly, they said, we look forward to the day we can show off. So it looks like they are preparing for whatever this will be with a few trainees and Tei Hanma. So we'll see what happens with that.
We've talked in the past episodes about all the Joshi or just Japanese wrestling that IWTV, independentwrestling.tv, has been adding to their service. And this week we found out that Battle Arts is coming to IWTV, or actually did come to IWTV on Friday night, right?
Well, they added a few shows, I think just on demand a week or so ago, from, I believe, 2009 to 2011, that period, which is sort of late Battle Arts. Battle Arts started in 1995. Last night on Friday, they streamed another show, which was from 2009. And we bring it up just to say that throughout the history of Battle Arts, they haven't been super consistent with this. but they have featured Joshi wrestlers. Last night on the show, they had a match with Kana, who, of course, is now Asuka in WWE. But they also have some matches up from their other shows that feature Kyoko Kimura, Toshi Uematsu, Carlos Amano. So it's usually just sort of one Joshi match a show. It isn't the entire show. But if you're interested in that, it's certainly a very interesting shoot-style promotion. So it's a little bit different than some of the Joshi promotions that were around at the time. So you can check that out. Also, our last episode, I mentioned that IWTV hadn't uploaded any Pure J to the service. So, of course, hours after I said that, very confidently, they uploaded a Pure J show to IWTV. It's their debut show from back in August of 2017. An interesting show, but so if you've been waiting for Pure J on IWTV, they have that show up now to watch.
And speaking of Pure J, they're going to be running their third anniversary show and Leon's 20th anniversary show on August 10th at Corcoran Hall.
Yeah, they announced that. Don't think they've announced any of the matches yet. I know that they have a show coming up just a little bit from when we're recording this on the 28th, so maybe that will lead into some match announcements for that fairly big show, their third anniversary, and obviously Leon, who's one of their bigger stars, her 20th anniversary show.
And about 6 days later, Wave is going to be at Corcoran Hall. They'll be celebrating Hero A's retirement and holding the opening round of the Catch the Wave tournament.
Yeah, Hero A is, you know, I was sort of disappointed to hear that she was retiring at the beginning of the year. She announced that she'd be retiring. I thought that maybe with the shutdown, maybe she would extend her time a little bit because I think she's a great wrestler and I think she really, you know, helps Wave out in terms of, you know, another talented wrestler. Wave doesn't have a huge, gigantic roster. So I always thought that she was very valuable, but it appears that retirement will still be happening, which is a bit of a bummer, but it is exciting to hear that it will be the opening round of Catch the Wave. It'll be interesting to see, with everything going on, who will be involved in that tournament, how many dates they'll have. It's usually a fairly long-running tournament, so I will definitely be keeping my eyes peeled to see if they get any outsiders or things like that, and who will be involved in that tournament, which is usually one of the highlights of the Joshi year each year.
Another big tournament that is going to be coming up is the Tokyo Princess Cup. It was supposed to be held from May to July. Now it's going to take place from August 8th to August 29th, and they will have 6 shows total.
Yeah, that's always another fun tournament. Glad to see that they have rescheduled it. They will be having, I think, I don't know off the top of my head, but it usually involves most, if not all, of their talent. So a good opportunity, if you're not too familiar with Tokyo Joshi, to watch that and really get familiar with a large portion of their roster. And they usually have some pretty good matches, you know, obviously all singles matches for that. And they're usually got some pretty good matches.
And they've just posted their May 31st pay-per-view up on Wrestle Universe, which used to be DDT Universe. So hopefully you didn't pay $15.
Yes, if you didn't pay $15, you can now see it. That was the one that was on RecLive.tv. I did watch it back in May. It's a very fun show. I highly recommend checking it out. Some very fun matchups and very well put together show. So if you're looking for some Tokyo Joshi to watch and you haven't seen that yet, I recommend checking it out.
All right, next up on the show, we'd like to do a segment called Spark Notes, which is shows that we're not going to dive deeply into. We just kind of want to talk about a match or two here or there. Although my understanding is none of these shows have happened yet.
Some of them have happened. Some of them haven't happened yet. It's sort of a strange mix. We're sort of at a point, a lot of shows tend to, you know, now that we're sort of in the situation we're in, seem to be happening on Saturdays and Sundays, which means, and we record this on the weekends, which means that some shows that we're recording now, as we're recording now, haven't happened, but by the time this is out, will have happened. So they're in this section, even though they have not aired yet. But we'll talk a little bit about them, just so you're aware, and you can seek them out when you hear.
All right, well, tell us what's coming up or what you've been watching.
So the first thing I watched is on Nico. Nico had a Real Japan show, which is a smaller promotion. They had one Joshi match, which was put together by Miyako Matsumoto. And it's a tag match. It's Miyako Matsumoto and Yu versus Shuri and Maika Ozaki from Ice Ribbon. It's a fun match. It's interesting to see. The show is at Shinjuku Face. I didn't watch the rest of the show. I just watched the Joshi match. It's fun. It's a good way to see some talent mix it up that maybe you might not see go head-to-head. There was also a Tokyo Joshi show on 620. Not a lot of big things happening there. Not a big storyline show, but some fun matchups. Ice Ribbon has been doing a lot of shows, but the biggest show they've done recently happened actually just hours before we recorded this. Ice Ribbon from June 27th, which featured two title matches, the mother-daughter IWGQ title match between Hamuko Hoshi and Ibuku Hoshi, and a triangle ribbon title match with Tei Hanma successfully defending her triangle ribbon championship. Also, at that show, they announced that Hamuko Hoshi will be taking on Maya Yukihi for the Ice Infinity title on July 12th. I believe, I haven't seen the show yet, but I believe that is because Hoshi beat Yukihi in the finals of the IWGQ tournament. That's how she earned that title shot. Diana, excitingly, announced that they will be live streaming a show on YouTube on June 28th. It's a really great card, actually. Tsukushi from Ice Ribbon going up against Haruka Umasaki. Madeline going up against Akane Fujita. And then a tag match of Kaoru Ito and Nanami going up against the Diana champion Ayako Sato and Kawasaki Rainbow Girl. And then what I believe is the main event, Jaguar Yokota, Yumiko Hoda, and Cherry are facing off in a three-person match. Seedling had a show this week that was on a service called Livit. I had never heard of Livit before this week. It's some sort of live streaming service. I'm not really sure. They live streamed that show, and as of now, it hasn't been put up on demand, unfortunately. It aired at 6 a.m., at least Eastern time in the United States, so I wasn't able to watch it. I'm hopeful that they put it up on some service like Nico, because it featured a great main event of the best friends, Arisa Nakajima and Tsukasa Fujimoto, going up against Yoshiko and Hiroyo Matsumoto, which this is all building towards July 13th. Seedling is having a show at Korakuen Hall, which will feature Yoshiko versus Arisa Nakajima for the Beyond the Sea title. That show will also feature Riko Shirai, who will be making her professional debut. That show will be airing on Samurai in the middle of July, and we will definitely be covering that show on this show. And then finally, two other shows. Marvelous on July 28th is having another dojo show. They've had a few dojo shows. They're very fun. They're only about an hour to an hour and a half. Those air on Fresh Live TV on the Marvelous streaming service. Definitely worth checking out. And Pure J has a show. I don't know whether this will be airing. It might be airing on the Pure J streaming service. I don't think they've said anything yet, but that show is headlined by Manami Katsu and Mari Manji challenging Makoto and Mooka Haruhi for the tag team champion. So that is sort of everything that has happened recently. That's quite a lot as I was running through it, but a lot of exciting stuff as Joshi really starts to get going again after their long break.
Yeah, hopefully we'll be able to talk a lot about, you know, current Joshi coming up soon. That's the plan. But since on this show we only had one new show to talk about, a full show to talk about, we've decided to continue our Stardom 2011 project. So we're going to talk now about the show from May 8th, 2011. Leading up to this show, Yu Yamagata was announced as X for the first Stardom six-person tag match. Yamagata was from Kaintai Dojo, trained in Arsion, and ends up sticking around Stardom for the next 6 months or so before she ends up in Wave. And then we have one more news note that comes after this show. So let's get into the show. May 8th, 2011, we're back at Shinkiba First Ring. About 308 fans. So, you know, about three times as many were at the show on June 21st of this year. Started the show with Tomoka Nakagawa defeating Eri Tsusa. And Taylor, well, I want to first hear from you. Nakagawa wins with a fisherman suplex. I want to first hear from you. Are you going to apologize to Eri Tsusa?
I will apologize to Eri Tsusa because one of my notes from this match is this is by far the best Eri Tsusa match in of the, what, six matches that she's had in her career. Not even close. She looks so much better. She has a fire behind her. She's really going after it. She has a great slap in the middle of the match, which I thought was really great. She slaps Nakagawa. She puts on a nice ankle lock, which I really liked. She had a weird submission where she sat on Nakagawa's head and then used her arm to, like, choke her or something. It was not clear. Look, she still has some issues. There were some moves that were not done well, that were missed. Running the ropes still appears to be a little bit of a challenge. But finally, I feel like finally we are seeing definitive improvement. And that's all. That's all I was looking for, was some improvement, and now we're seeing it.
You know, I think it's sad that you had to throw in some of those criticisms at the end. I worry a little bit about why you feel the need to do that when, I mean, she just had an excellent match. She basically, she clearly heard your comments from the last episode and proved you wrong this time out, and might as well have just, you know, cut a promo on you after the match telling you how you inspired her to be even better.
Look, I'll say this. If me offering some critiques makes the next match I watch better, I will critique every wrestler on this roster.
Wow. It's just a little sad. That's all I'm saying. I feel for you, Taylor. You know, some of us just focus on joy when we watch wrestling.
I cannot believe this.
Next up, Haruka taking on Natsuki Tayo. I went to a draw. The fun part here, I mean, we've learned in these shows, guaranteed heel heat, cheating against a child. And Natsuki Tayo seems to just revel in the crowd's boos as she cheats.
I did write, prior to the match beginning, I wrote, can you believe it, a 5-minute draw? And I was...
Okay, it's a 3-minute draw, first of all.
Oh, is it a 3-minute draw?
Yes.
Oh. Okay. Well, I was slightly off. I was right in the draw part, but, you know, I don't know that there's all that much new to say. I think all of these matches sort of are similar. As you mentioned, they're, you know, you attack a child, you get some heel heat, but, you know, I don't know. I don't really have that much to say about these matches anymore because they all sort of run together in my brain and in my mind.
They do. Yoko Bito defeated Arisa Hoshiki with a spin kick, and I thought this was really good. I need to look back at the other matches, but I was thinking, like, they haven't had a lot of really good singles matches in the promotion yet, and this has got to be one of the better ones.
I like this match, although I was thinking halfway through that, if anyone's ever, sorry to say, but if anyone's seen any old UWFI, they used to do a thing where on some shows, like in the middle of the show, they would just have like a kickboxing match for some reason. And I was thinking, you know, these are maybe the two best kickers in the promotion. And I was sort of wishing that they had made this like a kickboxing exhibition or match, because my favorite part of the whole match was the kicks. I mean, there were some really great kicks. Arisa's crane kick that she uses seemingly looks awesome every time she uses it, which seems so rare for something like that. You know, you think about all the super kicks you've seen in your life and how many of them just didn't look good. That every time she hits it, it looks like death. It looks like it makes full 100% actual contact with the person's head. I also enjoyed it. But my favorite part was those good kicks.
Well, Arisa was a shoot kickboxer.
Yes. Yeah, but just because you're a kickboxer doesn't mean that will transition well to the world of, you know, it would be very easy for her to go in and actually kick people in the head. I don't think she's actually kicking people in the head like she would if she were in a kickboxing match.
She should try that and see what happens.
Just become a become the shooter of Stardom.
Yeah, the Stardom shooter. Arisa Hoshi. It's funny too because she's like so bubbly, and just the idea of her just like kicking someone's head off is kind of fun. All right, main event time. This was a quick show, as they pretty much all are. The team of Natsuki Tayo, Yoshiko, and Yu Yamagata defeated Mayu Iwatani, Nanai Takahashi, and Aikawa. Yoshiko pinned Mayu. And I think I reached the point that you did last week, Taylor, where I was just like, I know this is good, but I'm just really bored of these main events.
Aaron, we cannot get on the same page with this. We should one of us needs to get knocked off by a week because I thought this was awesome. I went so 4.5 stars. I thought it was so good.
This is like the exact inverse of last time. Very funny.
But that's why one of us needs to like throw ourselves off by a week so that we're synced up, so that we both like the same matches and are bored by this. I just thought it was so good. I thought everyone, you know, obviously you go from a tag match to a six person and you have more people to deal with. I thought everyone played their role really well, including Mayu, who I think it was clear was probably, you know, by the fact that she was also pinned, was probably at the bottom of the six. But I thought she played her role really well as sort of, especially near the end, going up against Yoshiko as sort of this babyface in peril role, which I thought she did really well. At one point, Natsuki did a drop kicked her, and she went flying. She bashed into the ropes. She fell over. I did have a question in the beginning as to why Natsuki, Yu, and Yoshiko, who were all on a team, looked like they were dressed like doctors. They came out in these sort of white doctor robes, which was sort of strange to me. But I just thought everyone played their role really well. It was fast paced. It was hard hitting, you know, great kicks, but also people running around. I mean, Natsuki Tayo, who we've already talked about in previous shows, that I think that she is the glue that puts all of these really great matches together because she is so super talented that I just loved it. I thought it all came together. I thought it being six person instead of a tag match, I think for you saying, oh, it's very similar to what it was before, I think for some reason it being six person instead of a 2-on-2 tag really helped it for me because I think especially near the end, they were able to speed up in a way. Because you're not just relying on one person, you know, to come in and keep the pace up. You have two other people on your team who can come in, you know, make pin saves, things like that. So I thought it was really awesome. I was super impressed with Yu Yamagata. I'm glad to, you know, I sort of peeked ahead. I'm glad to see that she will be coming back and wrestling on more of these 2011 shows because I thought that she was really great and a great addition to the roster, so I really loved it.
I wanted to add, we didn't really say much about Tomoka Nakagawa, and I wanted to add that she was also a Kai and Tai Dojo trainee who really kind of jumped around to lots of promotions throughout her career. She probably had, I mean, somebody who knows better is going to laugh at me, but she probably had some tie to Yu Yamagata because she also seems to focus more on Wave later in her career, so I wouldn't be surprised if they were attached in some way.
Yeah, and I think a lot of these people came from also the Neo connection, which had obviously, we mentioned it when the promotion started, that there was some connection there, and that Nanai and Natsuki Tayo wrestled there. So that may have been the connection as well. But yeah, Nakagawa wrestled seemingly everywhere. Some people may know her or remember her from Shimmer, where she was a tag champion twice, once with, I think, Daisy Hayes, and the second time a few years later with Kelly Skater, right before she retired. Yeah, sorry, I was having a weird moment. But she was tag champs with her right before she retired. I think she retired back in 2015. So she is not wrestling anymore. Yu Yamagata is wrestling. She wrestles, I think, most often in Marvelous. Nowadays, she was with Wave for a number of years, but then switched over to Marvelous.
Well, that's the Stardom May 8, 2011 show. I think we're going to try to continue this. covering the Stardom, the older Stardom shows. And we'll just kind of see how it plays out as far as when it fits on the show. But we hope to continue talking about them when we can. I think the only thing left to do, Taylor, is to talk about some shows that are coming up. You want to tell us about those?
Yeah, so these are some shows that are coming up sort of in the next 2 weeks. We talked about in the news some shows that are happening in August and things like that. But these are shows that are happening in the next 2 weeks before we record our next episode. The first thing is Miyako Matsumoto announced she is doing a digital Miyakoko Fest on June 30th, which will see, I believe, one match, Miyako Matsumoto and Jun Kasai versus Drew Parker and Rina Yamashita. That is going to be streaming. They are actually encouraging overseas fans to check it out. I believe it's 2,000 yen to watch the show, and they also have an offer for 5,000 yen, and I believe that gets you into an after-show Zoom call with Miyako. As I said, they are encouraging overseas fans, so I believe there will be at least some, you know, maybe some English assistance if you're worried about watching a show all in Japanese or anything like that. But you can check it out. You can check out Miyako's Twitter. She's been tweeting about it, so check it out there. Also, I didn't mention this in the show catch-up. Chaco Pro has been continuing to run a lot of great shows. They're all available on their YouTube. But the big show coming up also on the 30th, it will be a singles match, Yuna Mizumori against Emi Sakura. For those following Chaco Pro, this has sort of been the match that has been built really since the beginning of the promotion. They're now on, I believe they're having their 27th show tonight. But that show on the 30th is a singles match between Yuna Mizumori and Emi Sakura, the big match. That will be streaming on YouTube and also on demand. You can check it out on the Gato Move YouTube if you want to go back and watch some of those Chaco Pro shows. They're all available there. They're really fun watches, some really great matches, some interesting talent. They just had Kaori Yonayama on for a few shows, so definitely worth checking out. As we mentioned on the last show, Makoto is producing a show for Nico Pro. They have finally decided, they were between July 4th and 5th. They've decided that that show will air on July 4th. That is the one with the main event trios match featuring Riho that we discussed on the last show. Oz Academy is returning to doing shows. They will be doing a show on July 5th featuring a Sekigun 8-person tag in the main event, Mayumi Ozaki, Yumi Oka, Maya Yukihi, and Sayori Anui versus Sonoko Kato, Akino, Kaori Yonayama, and Yu. Those, for those who watch Oz Academy, will probably be very similar to a lot of those main events. Very chaotic, a lot of interference. Don't know if that one will air on Nico or if it will air somewhere else, but keep your eyes peeled for that. Marvelous is running a show with fans at Shinkiba First Ring on July 6th. They've mentioned that it will be streaming somewhere. I don't think it'll be on Fresh Live TV. I think it'll be on some other service, but they haven't announced that officially yet. So also something to keep your eyes peeled for. And finally, Wave is going to have a show on July 7th. Nagisa Nosaki will defend the Regina de Wave title against Yuki Miyazaki, and also Sakura Hirota will be defending the Queen Elizabeth title against Kaori Ito and Tomoko Watanabe. So those are some shows to look out for in the next 2 weeks. We will cover those shows on the next episode as long as they all make it to a streaming service that we can
watch. It's so exciting. There's like matches, new matches to watch.
It's like, wrestling can happen and be current, and it, you know, we can get excited about things that are to come and not just be like, what's going to be happening? Who knows?
Yeah, and there can be like fans at these shows, I think. So it's very exciting. Okay, well, I think that's the show for this week. Make sure to look us up on Twitter at JBombAudio. I'm at Aaron Like the Car. Taylor is at TayMembo. Subscribe to the show. Give us a rating and review if you're using the Apple Podcast app. And you can also donate to the show at redcircle.com/shows/jumping-bomb-audio. But I think that's it. So for Taylor, I'm Aaron, and we'll see you next time.
Bye-bye.